tell who's famous and who's just a really ridiculously good-looking person, but I didn't have much time to process everything around me because the show was starting and an army of producers and headsets were barking at everybody to find their seats, sit down, and shut up. I sat in awe as the show progressed, and one celebrity after another came on stage. We were only a few rows from the front and could see where each person was sitting, who they were talking to, how nervous they looked before they went on stage. The gratifying thing about Hollywood, nobody knows what the hell they're doing, except maybe Oprah, and everybody is nervous as hell. Meanwhile, every 3 minutes, my parents would text me from their viewing party at home to tell me they caught a glimpse of my face as the camera panned over the crowd. Beforehand, the producers told us that my category wouldn't be announced on stage. Here's a not-so-secret secret about award shows. Nobody gives a fuck about the awards. Everybody is here for the glamour and the cameras and the spectacle. The People's Choice Awards give out something like 60 awards every year, and only about 15 of them are handed out on stage to people like Ellen and Selena Gomez, who are actually famous and not just on the internet. But the producers did tell us that they would hand out the award in the audience just when they came back from a commercial break, and they would give us a heads up when that was about to happen. Otherwise, all we had to do was sit and chill. Commercial breaks during award shows are absolute anarchy. The second the cameras turn off for a commercial, about half of the room stands up and shuffles about, going to the bathroom, heading backstage for a snack, or ditching the show entirely because they've seen what they came for and they're fucking sick of it. An army of seat fillers, a bunch of hot, young, aspiring actors and actresses who want to be around famous people, come in and fill all of the empty seats so that when the cameras return, they return to a nice, big room full of beautiful people who definitely didn't just play the biggest, most celebrity-filled game of musical chairs. The last 30 seconds before they come back from commercial is like a scene from a war movie, with producers running up and down the aisles, screaming at everything with a face, shoving every warm body into any available seat, skipping over rolls and rolls of camera cord, and elbowing production interns in the head. Honestly, I'm pretty sure I remember seeing one of them pull a gun and shoot an assistant in the neck. It's an absolutely glorious mess and twice as entertaining as the actual show. About halfway through the evening, during one of the commercial breaks, just as the cameras shut off, a producer runs up to me, trailed by a cameraman. She leans in. "You're Matt Balthazar, right?" she shouts. "Matt Balasai? Yeah, that's me." She shouts again. "Okay, good. We wanted to make sure you're in your seat. Get ready." At this point, my heart is pounding, or at least beating as hard as it can beneath the layers of Spanx I'm wearing. I mean, she's making sure I'm in the right seat. She's saying, "Get ready." That's gotta be a good sign, right? She goes back to the cameraman a few rows in front of us and points to me. The cameraman cranes his neck around the camera to get a look at me. He points at me to make sure he has the right fat, balding ginger, and the producer nods. I'm freaking out. My stomach is churning. I'm sweating through my disgusting Men's Warehouse suit because their cheap fabrics aren't breathable enough to handle my superhuman levels of body humidity. We hear someone shout, "30 seconds to air!" And everybody starts moving in different directions. Producers are screaming into microphones, hustling people this way and that way, barking orders at everyone in sight. 10 seconds! Someone else shouts. And the final chaotic dash for open seats commences. In the aisle where I'm sitting, a woman in a dress appears holding a glistening award statue. None of the other nominees in my category are sitting nearby, which can only mean one thing. I prepare my least nervous smile, I get ready to act surprised, to wave to the camera in glee as I hoist my award, to the sky. 5, 4, 3. And just as the cameras get ready to blaze back to life, just as the audience roars back to on-air applause, a seat filler, some woman in tacky heels and a tight black dress, rushes in front of the camera to try jumping into a seat in the row directly in front of us. The producer's veins bulge from her neck as she screams, "Get out of the way! Get out of the way!" The people are standing to make room for the woman in the black dress to sit. Everybody finally lowers to their seats, but by then, the cameraman is already moving forward, and in the confusion, he stops on the man sitting directly in front of me. And for a moment, time stops entirely. I should point out, for the record, that the man sitting in front of me looks absolutely nothing like me. I could understand, even sympathize with the cameraman, the very same cameraman who had pointed directly at me seconds earlier, had the man in front of me been wearing glasses, or had a comb over, or was wearing a similarly appalling Men's Warehouse suit hastily purchased the day before, but none of these things was true. The man in front of me had jet black hair, a beard, and giant gleaming teeth, and to top it all off, he was approximately 35 years older than me. And sure, maybe that cameraman suffers from one of those diseases where you can't tell faces apart, or maybe he had recently sustained one of those debilitating injuries to the part of the brain that remembers things for longer than 5 seconds. But in either case, I might kindly suggest that he pursue a different line of work until he's able to correctly distinguish an overweight bespectacled ginger from an old coot with fluorescent teeth. But now we'll never know. I look sideways at Jeremy beside me and chuckle nervously. It's the only thing I can do. Meanwhile, the cameraman is screaming now. "You won!" he screams at the man in front of me. "Act excited!" The man in front of me, just as confused as the rest of us, of course, gives the camera 2 thumbs up and smiles wildly. On the jumbo screens above us, the man is grinning frantically, and below his face it says, "Matt Belisai, favorite social media star." Behind the cameraman all the while, the producer is hysterically waving her hands. "Not him!" she's shouting in vain, pulling at her hair. "Not him!" But everything around us is too loud, the cameraman can't hear, and the man in front of me is waving too wildly for anybody to care. The woman with the statue comes forward and hands the award to me, but it's too late. The cameraman is already moving back up the aisle to his next shot, and the producer is following, shaking her head behind him. The lights are dimming, flames are shooting from the stage, the music begins to blare, and Jason Derulo walks out to thunderous applause. It's all over in about 20 seconds. The moments afterward are still a little blurry, in no small part because Jason Derulo was screaming on stage. I believe the first words that came out of my mouth afterward were, "What the fuck just happened?" Jeremy's mouth hung open and he started nervously laughing beside me. "Dude," he said, "I have no idea." His concern in that moment, I imagine, was making sure I didn't run directly into Jason Derulo's flames. "That was a mess," he said. And then I think I said something like, "I want to use this award to bash someone's head in." And yes, to be perfectly fair, they did hand it to me, and it did have my name on it. All very exciting. I won. I got to take it home. But it was also quite heavy, and in that moment, I thought it would have made the perfect blunt object with which to smash a certain cameraman's soft skull. Soon enough, my phone started buzzing as people expressed a combination of elation and mourning, like I'd just won a brand new puppy that someone subsequently stabbed to death in front of me. "Sorry, dude, that sucks," one friend texted me, "but at least you won." And then from my mother, "We still love you," as if the entire incident had cast their love in doubt, however briefly. The next commercial break, as chaos broke out again, a different producer came to see me and asked if I wanted to go backstage and talk to the press. That's what all winners do. Typically, when they walk offstage, you go to a room backstage and the press asks you dumb questions like, "How does it feel to win?" Sure, I guess," I told him. I still barely knew what was going on. My heart was still beating violently in my chest. The producer led me backstage, back through the doors we'd entered to take our seats, back through the hallway past the holding room. The producer is a few feet ahead of me, and as we walk through a door, another staffer stops me and says, "Do you have a badge to be back here?" And this, I admit, was my most aggressive diva moment of the night, because in that moment, I held up the statue with my name on it, looked that wretched staffer directly in the face, and shouted, "Does this count?" And I'll concede, it felt damn good. Almost as good as I imagine it would have felt to smash in that cameraman's head. But then she was like, "No, it doesn't. Do you have a badge?" The producer who'd been leading me realizes I'm not behind him anymore and comes back to fetch me. "He's with me," he tells the door staffer, and the door staffer is like, "I don't care. He needs a badge." so I had to stand there like a fool, shamefully digging into the pockets of my wilting Men's Warehouse suit for the badge I'd stuffed in one of them an hour before. Meanwhile, Sharon Osbourne walks past us, no badge, and no award, just saying, while I'm furiously reaching into my jacket for a hint of plastic. Finally, I dig out the badge and I'm like, "Here, are you happy?" And she waves me through like nothing happened. When I get to the press room, someone shouted for me to stand in the corner while they stuck a camera in my face. I had absolutely no idea what was happening. I held up my award and forced an awkward smile and gave a tiny, uncomfortable wave. The camera lingered for what felt like 10 whole minutes, then disappeared. That footage, I'd learn after, would be aired later in the show to make up for the mistake, but hilariously, in the background, you can hear someone say, "Who's he?" And someone else replies, "No idea." A man in a suit and white blonde hair approached me and shook my hand. "Congratulations," he said with a laugh. He introduced himself as the president of the People's Choice Awards. Yes, there's a president of the People's Choice Awards. "Do you know what happened out there?" he asked me. I laughed at first because I thought he was joking, but then I realized he was seriously asking me if I knew what just happened. "Yes," I said. "The camera was on the wrong person." "Did you plan that?" he asked me. "What do you mean?" I asked back. In my head, I was thinking, "What the fuck are you talking about? This is your show." "Oh," he said. "We thought maybe you told the camera guy to do that." I'm sure my mouth was gaping because he patted me on the shoulder, said something like, "Well, sorry about that, but congrats anyway," and walked away, leaving me to figure out what the hell I was supposed to do next. A backstage producer came up to me and asked, in the same tone that you ask a child you found lost in a grocery store, "Would you like to find your publicist?" And I nodded my head sheepishly, so we tracked down Liz, the BuzzFeed publicist, who similarly greeted me like a child she'd lost at a grocery store and looked at me with a searching gaze, trying to detect what mood I was in, whether I found this all hilarious or maddening or both. "What the fuck happened?" she asked me, and I was like, "I still have no idea. I just want alcohol." She led me farther backstage, where a row of photographers took the obligatory pictures of me holding my award. I'm clearly sweating my face off in all of those photos, and my smile looks like the smile of a person who just strangled a man in a motel shower, but what beautiful memories I'll have forever. Afterward, we walked back to the green room. There was still no alcohol there, just Sharon Osbourne and a platter of brownies. I can't be positive, but I'm pretty sure I ate approximately 70 of those brownies in that moment. To top it all off, John Stamos, who'd won for some show he was in, walked into the green room and went to set down his award next to mine. And I said something like, "Uh-oh, we don't want to mix those up." And he looked at me, dead serious, and said, "You can have mine." But then he smiled that Uncle Jesse smile, even though I was already furiously stuffing his award into my back pocket. And I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for my goddamn Men's Warehouse suit. When everything finally died down, Jeremy and I went to the after party. The heads of the accounting firm that tabulates the results of the awards, those people you always see on television carrying the suitcases, came up to me while I was double-fisting champagne with my award under my armpit. "Yeah, you have to just carry it with you the rest of the night." And apologized for the mix-up, but they assured me the results were all very real and I'd really, truly won the thing, which in some small way was a genuine comfort, since a part of me assumed they had only picked me out of pity over my laughable chances. I told them thank you between mouthfuls of appetizers, and we all took a lovely picture together that I'm sure exists somewhere in the universe. At this point, it was still only 8 p.m., but I was physically exhausted, and the only real famous person at the after party was celebrity attorney Gloria Allred. So Jeremy and I left. On the way back to the hotel, we stopped and got tacos, and I dragged those tacos back to my hotel bed and ate them in my underwear with my award cradled beside me. And yes, I kissed her goodnight and tucked her in and was glad she was covered in taco grease and not the juices of a cameraman's skull. The next day, I got a text message from a number I didn't recognize from a man named Eric who introduced himself as the man with the teeth who was sitting in front of me the night before. He asked if he could call me, and a few minutes later, we were on the phone together. "I'm so sorry about what happened," he told me. "I wasn't even supposed to be in the audience, but I'm a vocal coach and Jason is one of my students." Jason, I realized, was Jason Derulo. "He was performing and he wanted me in the audience to watch him," he said. "I had no idea why the cameras were on me, but they told me to smile." I assured him he did nothing wrong. It was the cameraman's fault. And then I made him promise to give me vocal lessons. Because if this ever happens again, I sure as hell better be able to sing my way out of it.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Everything is Awful and Other Observations, written and performed by Matt Belisai. Executive producers, Laura Gatchko and Mike Charzik. Producer, Neil Basic. Copyright 2017 by Matt Belisai. Sound recording copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.